Today's message is entitled, We All Need a Jethro. One night in Dade County, Florida, some nasty vandals cut down 6 royal palm trees along Flagler Street. It truly was a shame, especially since I didn't know this, that royal palms are very expensive. They truly add to any landscape, but they were certainly beautiful along the street. They even went so far as to nicely frame a big billboard that advertised a particular airline saying, Fly Delta. The county authorities were not sure if or when the palms could be replaced because of the exorbitant cost in doing so. However, someone stepped forward and donated 6 more royal palms and even paid to have them planted. It was an extremely generous donation considering that the original palms were only 15 feet tall and these new ones were 35 feet tall. You might appreciate the donor's generosity until you realize that the new palms hid the billboard advertising Delta Airlines and that new palms were donated by a rival airline. Motivations are very important, aren't they? In criminal investigations, particularly in homicides, one of the key things that investigators try to uncover is motive. Why we do something is sometimes actually more important than what we do. We even have a few idioms to express the importance of motivation. We say things like, the end justifies the means. There is method in his madness. If there is a will, there is a way. And those are just a few. Motivations are very important, but even more important than motivation is sometimes our need for a motivator. Someone who comes along and pushes us to accomplish something. Someone who kicks our butts and gets us off the couch. When we are younger, our parents are often the motivators in our lives, but also we may have had teachers or coaches who undertook that role in our lives. All of us know of the oft-used cliche in a sports movie where the coach meets with the team at halftime and tries to motivate his players to overcome a deficit in the score. Many a person will claim that their spouse is their motivator. I heard a funny line once in a Christian comic that had someone exclaiming, I have a purpose-driven wife. In our journey through the sermon series, borrowing again from Leonard Sweet's book, 11 Indispensable People, we examine our need today, our urgent need for a motivator, a Jethro. The Jethro we meet today hasn't a very large role in the Bible, but he has a critical one in the history of Israel and by extension, the history of the church, which is to come in hundreds of years after the story. Jethro was a Midianite. He was called in the Bible a high priest of God. And he actually lived at least some of the time within the shadow of Mount Horeb, which was considered the holy mountain of God. The Midianites were a nomadic tribe. They moved around a lot to try and find pasture for their livestock. Today we might think of them as kind of like Bedouins. It was into Jethro's encampment that Moses stumbled after fleeing from Egypt. Jethro had no sons, but he had 7 daughters. And Moses ends up marrying one of Jethro's 7 daughters named Zipporah. And that in Hebrew means bird. In Exodus 4, we read the amazing encounter that Moses has with God at the burning bush. And we learn of God's call to Moses to go back to Egypt and lead the Israelites out of bondage. And I read for you that Moses was quite reluctant to go. He made excuses. Like he was not a man of eloquent speech and the Lord should send someone else. Well, this reluctance angered God, who, to ease Moses' apprehension, appoints Aaron to travel with him. What we maybe have never caught before in this story is in verse 18. After returning from the mountain where he had met God, what does Moses do? Instead of immediately packing his bags and heading off, he consults with Jethro, who is his father-in-law. And the reason for the consultation is quite reasonable. Moses respected Jethro and respected his counsel, and he owed some loyalty to Jethro, who brought Moses into his family and also into his camp. Moses tells Jethro that he wishes to go and visit his family. That's not entirely true. And Jethro knows that there's more to it than that. He senses within Moses a reluctance. Something God directed is going on here, and Jethro knows it. It is then that Jethro becomes the motivator and gives Moses a push out the door. In verse 18, Jethro uses a phrase our Bibles read as, "Go with my blessing." Now that sounds really great, but it's not actually what the original Hebrew tried to communicate. Jethro uses a Hebrew phrase, "lek leshalom." The phrase literally means, "go to peace." Now, elsewhere in the Bible, as when David said goodbye to his son Absalom, he used the phrase, "lek bi shalom," which means go in peace. Did you catch the difference? Go to peace and go in peace. Now, grammar can really make a difference in meaning, and here is no exception. What followed Jethro's blessing of go to peace was that Moses certainly returned to Egypt and he led the liberation of Israel. What followed David's blessing of go in peace was Absalom died. We often have used the blessing go in peace without realizing that historically in the scriptures it was actually a blessing of death. Going in peace means finding perfect rest, and that can only happen when you die. Go to peace and going in peace have two very distinct meanings. Go to peace is not resting. It does not mean peace and quiet. Leonard Sweet rightly points out that if you want peace and quiet, don't follow Jesus. Jesus was crucified because his presence challenged the peace and quiet. Jesus did not die in a soft bed, but rather on a cruel cross. Going to peace entails a struggle. It entails hardship. Its goal is to bring wholeness to a very fractured world. Telling someone to go to peace is a powerful act to do for someone to do something. You are literally pushing them forward towards the challenge, towards the struggle and growth and purpose. The Jethros in our lives call us, they push us, they commission us to wade out into a messy world and bring hope. A Jethro will not allow us to just coast through life while others are suffering around us. A Jethro makes us confront our God-given capacity to wield influence in this world. To be, as Jesus says, salt and light. A Jethro confirms a truth that Cynthia Ozich once penned, "Who squanders talent praises death." A Jethro reminds us of the words of James, who wrote long ago, "Faith without works is dead." He goes on, "Dear brothers and sisters, what's the use of saying you have faith if you don't prove it by your actions? That kind of faith can't save anyone. Suppose you see a brother or sister in need of food or clothing, and you say, 'Well, goodbye and God bless you, stay warm and eat well.' But then you don't give that person any food or clothing. What good does that do?" So you see, it isn't enough to just have faith. Faith that doesn't, doesn't show itself by good deeds is no faith at all. It's dead. It's useless. Jethro will not rest until our faith is no longer dead, but rather it's active and vital. Jethro keeps at us, pointing out our talents, our need to employ them for God's glory and the benefit of others. Jethro recognizes that all of us are on a mission. And when on a mission, we must keep going. Jethro's will not allow us to make excuses. They will not allow us to manipulate our way out of our mission and our calling. Jethro recognizes the lie of the phrases that we use to avoid engagement in this world. They're very familiar to us. Phrases like, well, I'm not skilled enough, eloquent enough, old enough, or young enough. And the real doozy that we hear is, I will only go if you go. With so many sitting on the sidelines, no wonder so little gets done. Jethro's bless us to get on with it, to go where God is sending us. Every one of us needs someone to wake us up, shake us out of our doldrums so we can live large. Jethro is a blesser, not a flatterer. Jethro is not very interested in making us feel good, but rather helping us to avoid becoming irrelevant. Jethro gets us to see behind the curtain and to observe who or what is pulling the strings. Chuck Swindoll tells the story of staying a couple of nights at the Peabody Hotel in Orlando, Florida. One of the things that makes this hotel famous is that twice a day they hold what is known as the Parade of Ducks. While Stars and Stripes Forever is played over a loudspeaker, ducks come from all over and they muster on the main floor and a red carpet is unrolled. Then the ducks march without a quack as they go from the fountain in the hotel to behind a curtain. The ducks parade on that carpet. All the while, the guests stand around watching and applauding the ducks. Swindle decided to do what no one else had ever done. He would follow the ducks behind the curtain. Now Swindle says, I know why the ducks do that. Back behind the curtain, there's no order at all. There's duck food everywhere. Behind the curtain, there are quacks and flapping of wings and feathers going all over the place. The ducks did not really want to march down that red carpet. Marching down a red carpet is not what ducks normally do, but they did it to get the food that was behind the curtain. Jethro gets us to look behind the curtain, to ask, what is your life's motivation? To see if you are, rather, history. Ever have someone tell you that you're history? Well, Jethro reminds us that that expression actually has two meanings. Just as there are two blessings that we heard about earlier, usually when someone says to us, you are history, it refers to an end of a job, end of a relationship, but most of all, it means the end of our lives. All of us, without exception, will ultimately be history. But the other meaning is just as powerful. Our lives lived in this world are making history. We are history. God is using us to change things, to bring wholeness and hope to our world. Jethro's call us to live under both blessings. We are to live each day as if it is our first as we make history, but also we are to live as if it is our last and we could be history at any moment. Jethro's get us to turn our gaze away from the past, where we focused on our mistakes, and get us to focus on the future and what could be if our lives mattered. And they do matter. In John 20, verses 19 to 22, we read that Jesus breathed on his disciples while saying this, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I send you. A new covenant, a new creation, ushered in by Christ was never meant to be a call to rest and to have reflection, but rather it's a call to action and mission. Jethro's call us to work, to put our faith into action. Do you remember Nehemiah in the Old Testament? One of my favorite stories, actually. In the year 445 BC, Nehemiah receives visitors from Jerusalem who gave him a detailed report about the desolation of Jerusalem. The news wrecked him. But out of that devastating news came a call for hope, a call to go to peace, the call to rebuild the city and bring wholeness and hope. If you will remember, Nehemiah's call was contagious. Once he committed to the task, others joined in. Nehemiah then became a Jethro to dozens and dozens of people, calling them from other villages and cities to help. Jethros do something else for us that's in vital need right now. In Exodus 18, Jethro comes to meet Moses at the Israelite camp, or encampment. And Jethro has heard about all that God has done, but Moses has neglected something vital. Some time ago, Moses sent his wife and his children to Jethro for safekeeping, but now his family needs Moses as much as Israel does. Moses had been wearing himself out trying to manage the grievances of the Israelites. So Jethro tells Moses that he's in danger of harming himself. He needs to delegate responsibility. And Moses does exactly that, appointing a responsible man to handle the disputes. Sometimes a Jethro, after getting us to move on our calling, can see that as success grows, we can lose ourselves. We can be swept away, unable to keep things in perspective. A Jethro is always concerned about what their encouragement has wrought, so they commit to checking, advising, and supporting the one that they've pushed out of the nest. If you're thinking right now that you don't seem to have a Jethro in your life, the reason could be that you haven't got a good fix on the mission that God has called you to. There is no point in motivating anyone if you're not sure what you're being motivated for. One surefire way to discover what your mission is to think about the things that excite you and draw your interest or cause you great concern. What things give you joy? What things, like Nehemiah, wreck you? Bishop John Speary, who was the retired Anglican bishop of the Arctic, served in the Yukon Territory for many years, and he realized while he was there that there was no Inuit translation of the Bible. So Bishop Speary set out to produce one. But fairly soon into the project, it came to a sudden halt. In the Inuit language, there is no word for joy, just images and metaphors. When translators came to the resurrection story, they had an awful time trying to figure out how they would express joy in the Inuit language. The closest they could come in the Inuit language is the metaphor, wagging the tail. And that explains why in Inuit, John 20 verse 20 became, when the disciples saw the Lord, they wagged their tails. Jethro gets us to ask ourselves, what gets your tail wagging? So who is your Jethro? Who are you a Jethro to? Who kicks your butt and pushes you off the couch? Who challenges you to engage in this world and demonstrate a life of faith? These are critical questions today when we hold our, or today when we hold church meetings, for example, when we think about how we can give response to the poor around us. Some of our folk today will be Jethro to us. They will call us out of our complacency and our self-focus. Are we ready to hear them? Are we ready to move forward? I sincerely hope so. So I want to end today with a blessing for all of you. Dear friends, I say to you, go to peace.